court has two matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 050541, First American Title Insurance Company, an old Republic National Title Insurance Company, versus the Comptroller and Attorney General of Texas from Travis County in the 3rd Court of Appeals District, and 060247, Ulico Casualty Company versus Allied Pilots Association from Tarrant County and the 2nd Court of Appeals District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these arguments, and the court will take a brief recess between the arguments. The proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is ready to hear argument in 050541, First American Title and Old Republic National Title versus the Comptroller and Attorney General of Texas.
Please the court. Mr. Reed will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is a case about insurance retaliatory taxes. Everyone agrees that the purpose of retaliatory taxes, which is to equalize taxes between the various states by penalizing companies from states that impose excessive insurance taxes relative to those collected by the retaliating state. Everyone agrees that's the purpose. The key issue in this appeal is whether the comptroller can apply the Texas retaliatory tax statute in a way that disregards 85% of the tax paid on the title insurance premiums in Texas and thereby virtually ensures retaliation against companies from every other state in the country, even if those other states impose lower taxes on insurance than Texas. Now, let's start with a brief overview of retaliatory taxes. The retaliatory tax is a mirror image tax that requires a comparison of the insurance tax in Texas to the insurance taxes in the home state of the company being retaliated against. For example, Old Republic is a company from Minnesota, so the comparison would be if Minnesota's insurance taxes on a Texas company would be higher than Texas's taxes on Old Republic, Texas would impose a retaliatory tax equal to the difference in order to encourage Minnesota to lower its tax.
But not income taxes or other kinds? Do we consider other kinds of tax burdens?
Generally speaking, Your Honor, retaliatory taxes are imposed on taxes that are specific to insurance. They're generally not imposed on personal income taxes, corporate franchise taxes, taxes that every business is subject to generally. They are specifically aimed at the tax on the insurance transaction. And in this case, both in other states and in this state, the principal insurance tax is the premium tax.
Is our state, though, unique in that it doesn't, at least the Court of Appeals interpreted the statute, not to make the insurer ultimately liable? That's a little bit different than the other state statutes, isn't it?
It is quite a bit. If that interpretation of the premium tax statute were accepted, and we'll come back to that question in a moment, but even if you assume that, that is very unique. In virtually every state, I believe the insurance premium tax falls solely on the insurer.
That being the case, since the premium tax, 85% of it, does not fall on the insurer, then doesn't it fit the plain language of the statute to interpret it the way the comptroller did?
I think there are two reasons why it does not fit the plain language, and in fact we submit the plain language supports the appellant's position. First of all, the language of the retaliatory tax statute itself speaks of the taxes that are directly imposed on the out-of-state company. And in this case, the tax is paid directly by the out-of-state company, 100% of it paid to the comptroller.
But only through remittance from the agent. In other words, if it wasn't paid, then the comptroller could not come against the insurer for 85%. So when we say it's paid by, that's a little bit confusing.
Well, Your Honor, let me turn to the words of the statute itself, and we have helpfully tried to put this on a poster board here. This is Section 223.003A, which is the current version of the Title Insurance Premium Tax Statute. If you read Section 223.003A, it directly says, number one, that the tax is imposed on the title insurance company, and secondly, that the taxable premiums of the company include the premiums retained by the title insurance agent. I don't think the legislature could have any more clearly said that 100% of the premium tax
is shared. The tax is shared. Isn't that correct? The premium tax.
That's not how I would look at it, Your Honor. I believe.
Excuse me, Counselor.
Sorry.
The tax is shared between the agents and the corporation. That is not how you interpret the way the tax is
Well, first of all, again, looking at the words of the statute, I believe it clearly states that 100% of the tax is imposed on the insurer. The insurer clearly
has... So agents don't pay any premium taxes in Texas?
The agent simply remits 15% of the premium to the title insurance company.
So they, but just do they pay premium tax or not, agents?
We do not believe that the agent pays the premium tax, Your Honor. Certainly the agent does not write a check to the comptroller. Only the insurance company writes the check. Only the insurance company files a tax return.
But it comes out of the 80% of the agent's premium.
Well, again, Your Honor,
come out of the insurer's premium.
If you look at the statistical report of the Texas Department of Insurance, the Department of Insurance sets the premium division between the agent and the insurer. Their statistical report, which is in the record, shows a line item for the expense on the insurance company's side of the ledger for gross premium tax. 100% of the gross premium tax goes on the insurer's side of the ledger. There's no comparable line on the agent's side. So when the insurance department is setting division of premium, they are not allocating the tax between the two entities. They're saying 100% of this is treated as an expense of the insurer. And when you look at...
Presume for purposes of argument that it is divided that way. Presume that the agent pays on his 85% and he's the only one that pays that percentage of the premium tax and the insurer, because that appears to be the comptroller's intent, was to divide these up and not make the insurer liable for its agent's tax burden. If that's the case, then how is this unconstitutional?
Your Honor, I think that the constitutional problem, even if you assume that in reality the agent is paying, and we certainly don't think that's the reality of what's happening here, because the premium that's being charged at the point of sale is bearing this 1.35% tax rate any way you look at it, and it's being paid literally by the insurance company. But even if you indulge the assumption that somehow the agent is responsible because there's a sharing of this tax, when every other state imposes all of the insurance tax on the insurance company, regardless of the division with the agent, you know, the division of the premium in those states with the agent, and Texas applies its retaliatory tax in a way that not taking into account the total tax burden on that insurance transaction, you're creating a disparity that undermines the constitutional purpose that the Supreme Court has found for retaliatory taxes. In the Western and Southern case, the court upheld retaliatory taxes, but clearly indicated that the purpose of that tax is not to raise revenue for the state, but rather to equalize taxes among the various states, try to create this national model of moderate and equal taxation. And when one state begins to apply its retaliatory tax in a way that is so out of line with every other state, they essentially cross the line from trying to deter other states from charging greater taxes to simply double taxing the premiums that are collected in Texas. And the effect of the comptroller's interpretation is the 85% that she deems to fall on the agent is taxed once through the tax that is paid by the insurance company after the division with the agent, and then is taxed a second time through the retaliatory tax.
But how can we say that there's not a rational basis for the comptroller's decision if you presume that she's dividing them based upon what each actually pays? I mean, there is a quid pro quo here, and we're not really looking at whether it's smart or good or right. It just has to have a rational basis. And it would seem that just inherently it would have a rational basis based upon the premise that she's dividing it up on who's paying.
Well, Your Honor, I think, first of all, in constitutional tax cases, the case law is quite clear that you are not required to defer to the characterization of the tax. The form of the tax is not what's important. It's the substance of it. And our position is, in substance, the insurer is paying 100% of the tax, and that is certainly how every other state is going to look at it. And secondly, as I think the American Fire case from New Jersey illustrates, when one state is applying a very unique interpretation of its own tax laws, and the result is they're going to be retaliating against virtually every other state, you have to stop and ask, is this really accomplishing what retaliatory taxes are designed to do?
But I guess my question is that a judicial decision, or is that something that should be left to the comptroller? If havoc happens as a result of this interpretation, are we stepping on her territory by getting involved?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that goes to a very fundamental question here. The Court of Appeals certainly took the view that they should defer to the comptroller's interpretation of these statutes. And we maintain for a number of reasons that that's inappropriate here. First of all, as we've been discussing, I think there is a serious equal protection clause question raised here, and the court's normal approach is to interpret statutes to avoid those avoid essentially creating a constitutional issue about the statute.
Has this court ever held that an economic regulation violates equal protection?
I couldn't name a decision like that, Your Honor, but certainly the U.S. Supreme Court in the Ward case issued exactly that sort of ruling under the Equal Protection Clause dealing with the taxation of out-of-state insurance companies.
As you construe the case law, is there any difference, significant difference between Texas and U.S. equal protection?
I believe this court has said that its own Equal Protection Clause is at least as stringent as the U.S. Equal Protection Clause. I'm not sure whether it goes beyond. Some states have interpreted their uniformity clauses to impose a higher burden than rational basis. I'm not sure this court has actually addressed that question. The other point I was going to make in response to Justice O'Neill's question, though, of should we defer to the comptroller, is that there is a long history with retaliatory taxes around the country. These are treated as a punitive statute because they're imposing a penalty on the out-of-state company, not for anything it did, but in order to influence the behavior of the other state. And because these statutes are punitive in nature, it has long been interpreted that they should be strictly construed against the state and in favor of the taxpayer for two reasons. First of all, to ensure fairness to the taxpayers who were subject to these punitive taxes, but more importantly, to ensure that you don't create unnecessary conflicts with other sovereign states who have their own taxing systems.
But it seems to me that the insurance company gets something in return here. They are, and I know you dispute this, but under the comptroller's interpretation, they are no longer liable for the agent's portion of the tax premium if the agent doesn't pay. If the agent goes under, if the agent doesn't remit, they're relieved of a certain chunk of liability here.
Well, that is the comptroller's position, apparently, but we don't see any real evidence in the record of any cases where the agent has ever been required to pay the tax or of companies being let off the hook for substantial amounts of retaliatory tax. I think that in virtually every case, first of all, the statute clearly says, again, that the tax is imposed on the insurance company, and the later section of the same part of the code says that if the insurance company fails to pay all of the taxes due, that one of the sanctions is they can lose their license to write insurance in Texas. I think it is clear that their obligation is to pay all of the tax. They may be relieved in certain circumstances. For example, if they never get the remittance, I think it's reasonable to interpret that they never received the premium and therefore they don't owe the tax. That's different from saying they aren't liable when they actually have received the premium and have to pay the tax.
The comptroller has said that her interpretation would not cause other states to retaliate, and I understand that Minnesota has done that. Would you speak to that for a moment?
Yes, Your Honor. I think two things. Minnesota certainly has, as was noted in the briefs, issued a revenue notice indicating that a hypothetical very close to the actual facts of this case, that Minnesota would impose a retaliatory tax measured by this double tax that Texas is imposing. And I think Minnesota's theory, presumably they don't spell it out in the revenue notice, but is that they're looking through the transaction and saying, look, the effective tax that's really being imposed on the insurance company in Texas is the full tax, not just 15%, and that's what we're going to react to.
And this sort of leads me to just a question about on similar lines as Justice O'Neill's, not deferring to the comptroller, but isn't there a legislative fix? I mean, if it turns out that because of the way the comptroller interprets this statute, other states retaliate and raise the premium taxes on title companies from Texas, that the legislature then would revise this statute to make clear that this interpretation is erroneous. So, is there a legislative fix rather than a constitutional problem?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, the legislature could fix this problem with a stroke of a pen, no question about it. But our point is, if you look at the statute as written, we believe that the legislature has already spoken to this issue. They have said that the taxes that are directly imposed on the insurance company are what we're concerned about. I think any kind of strict construction of that statute would include the tax that's paid directly to the state by the insurer. And secondly, in 223.03, they've made it quite clear that the entire premium, including the portion retained by the agent, is the taxable premium of the insurer. So if there's to be a legislative fix, I think first you would want a clear statement from the legislature that they really did intend this form of retaliation that is so out of step with what other states have done, for which there's no precedent that we can find in any other jurisdiction, you'd want a clear statement from the legislature they really intended that before you had to address the question of whether this is a constitutional way to proceed.
Remind me, this rule change occurred in the, was it mid-90s?
It's a little vague, Your Honor. The interpretation seems to have been first published as a change in around 2000.
The amicus brief that Stewart Title filed says that if the court invalidates the comptroller's current interpretation, it estimates it'll owe an additional $7.4 million in premium taxes in 22 states. Do you know why that would be?
Your Honor, I'm not entirely clear. They don't spell out what their theory behind that is, but the only thing I could speculate is that they're hoping to take the ruling that only 15% is paid in Texas to other states to try to convince other states to lower their retaliatory tax. That's going to depend a lot on how the other states interpret this. Based on the one example we have from Minnesota, it does not appear that Minnesota is viewing this the same way that Stewart Title is, and in fact, rather than lowering their tax, they're planning to raise it. But
there is an alternative argument that it could have the effect of lowering.
Well, again, if the other state accepts at face value that the tax is only paid on 15% of the premium, I suppose that's what Stewart would argue in other states. But as we point out, the reality here is that I think other states are going to view this as states traditionally have viewed it. The insurance premium tax, which is on the actual transaction of selling title insurance, which is paid 100% to the state, falls on the insurer. And that's the logical way, I think, for any other state to look at it. And I think it's the fairest reading of the statutes on their face. And certainly when the rule of strict construction is taken into account, I think the only possible outcome here. If there are no further questions, I'll
further questions
for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Ms. Munzingo will present rebuttal for the respondents.
May it please the Honorable Texas Supreme Court. Address a couple of misstatements first. Petitioner claims that the Texas retaliatory tax would apply even if other states had lower taxes. That's incorrect. The retaliatory tax only applies in the situation where the other states have higher tax rates or higher tax bases. Secondly, the petitioner said that business and occupation and income taxes are not considered under the Retaliatory Act. They are expressly stated in the retaliatory statute.
How is it even possible to consider that?
Well, take California, for example. California imposes net income tax on the agents and on insurers. When the insurer calculates its Texas retaliatory tax, it takes the gross premium that it has received, it deducts the agent's portion of the gross premium, and it calculates its net premium that tax is due on. California taxes the insurer on generally 10% of the premium and taxes the agent generally on 90% of the premium. California allows the insurer and the agent to determine the premium split by contract. And so in California, First American's home state, there is a normal split of 90-10, and the insurer only pays tax on 10% of the premium.
It looks like to me it all comes out of the same pot.
Well, in
whoever pays it. I mean, we say, well, we're going to do this business, and you're going to get this piece, and I'm going to get this piece, but you're worrying about what you're going to have at the end of the day and not how this particular piece is split.
Well, Justice Hecht, in a sense, that's correct. But in all states, including Texas, there are different mechanisms for taxing the agent and the insurer. In Texas, what we have in the premium statute that is somewhat unusual is that the insurer collects the tax from the agent, so that the state doesn't have to collect tax from 500 agents. It's simply an efficient...
Well, but the insurer collects the premium.
The insurer collects the premium, and the statute says that the premium includes the agent's share of premium tax. And as a result of that, the agent, title insurance agents, are exempt from franchise tax and other gross receipts taxes, while other insurance agents are not.
But would your argument be any different if the agent remitted 100% of the premium to the insurer and then the insurer sent back 85%?
Insurer sent back 85%?
Yeah, sent back 85%. The agent sends the whole premium to the insurer. The insurer sends back 85%. It comes out the same way. It just goes back and forth. Surely the argument wouldn't be any different.
It's correct that 100% of the premium is taxed. But the way the Texas statute is set up, it's taxed by being collected from the agent. The situation you described is somewhat analogous to the Washington case in which First American took the position that the business and occupation tax should not be assessed 100% on it because it was simply the pass-through for the premium. In Washington State, the insurer collects the entire premium and gives 10% to the agent. The state attempted to tax 100%, and the court held that, no, the insurance company was simply the pass-through for the premium, so it was not their income. Here, the insurance company is simply the pass-through remitter for the agent. Now, there would be no...
Let me try it again. If the insured pays the premium to the agent, because that's who he's dealing with.
Yes.
The agent sends the whole thing to the insurer.
Yes.
The insurer sends back 85%. Would your argument be any different?
It wouldn't be any different because that is exactly analogous to the Washington State situation.
But it looks to me like then you would say, well, but the tax that the insurer pays is they're paying on 100% of the premium. They're just sending 85% back. But it doesn't seem to me that it matters when that split occurs.
Okay. It matters under the statute because the statute says that the division of premium is structured so that the agent's share of tax is remitted to the insurer with the division of premium. And as a result, the agent is exempt from other taxes. There would be no reason for the Texas legislature to exempt these business enterprises from other gross receipts and franchise taxes if they did not pay, if they were not subject to the insurance premium tax. And in fact, the Franchise Tax Act says, the exemption provision says, you are exempt from franchise tax because you pay an annual tax on gross premium.
But that's not really relevant to determining the retaliatory tax issue. I mean, that's more of a quid pro quo the legislature's given in this circumstance, but it doesn't really affect how other states would calculate retaliatory tax.
Well, other states calculate retaliatory tax based upon the comptroller's interpretation. That's the standard. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners publishes a manual, which is distributed to all states. And all states, except Minnesota right now, take the agency's word for how the statute is interpreted and calculate retaliatory tax using that. Minnesota is an outlier. During the pending of the petition for review, Minnesota issued a revenue ruling which is contrary to every other state's application of retaliatory tax. Under the Minnesota revenue ruling, you add the retaliatory tax to the premium tax to calculate retaliatory tax. No one else does that. There's no basis for it.
Was that in reaction to this case?
Old Republic is domiciled in Minnesota. There's nothing in the record that says there's a direct relationship.
And you say they're an outlier, but has anyone else considered the issue that you know of?
Yes.
Other state?
The state of Oregon in 1996 agreed that the insurance agent is subject to 85% of the premium tax and calculated Stewart Title's tax based on the 15% of gross premium share under the Texas statute.
Is it really unclear when this rule change became effective?
It is clear that there are two changes. One is the gross premium tax statute itself, which in 2001 said that the insurer and the agent are proportionately liable for the tax. That change was prior to the audit periods in issue. The audit periods are 2001 and 2002.
And since then, aside from the Minnesota revenue ruling, are there other examples of actual retaliation against insurance companies in Texas?
No, there aren't. And as a constitutional matter, actual retaliation by another state is irrelevant. The Western and Southern Life case is controlling precedent here, and it says that retaliatory statutes are constitutional. They have a rational basis. They serve the legitimate purpose of helping domestic companies in their interstate business.
What is the revenue impact of the comptroller's interpretation from before and after? Is there more revenue because of this?
There's nothing in the record about the revenue, and I don't know. I mean, I would assume that because the insurers got 6.6 times more credit in the past than they do now, that they would be paying more. However, the title insurance premium tax is an extremely small percentage of the general revenue, and it is only about 4.5% of all insurance taxes.
Is it anyway important to constitutional analysis whether this is a revenue enhancer or not?
No, it is not.
It certainly was mentioned by Justice Brennan in Western.
Yes, yes, but regardless of whether it in fact is a revenue enhancer is irrelevant under the equal protection standard, because the standard is there a legitimate purpose? The U.S. Supreme Court said, yes, retaliatory taxes have a legitimate purpose. And then the
but they didn't say that if you call it a retaliatory tax, it's okay. They just said if you structure it this way, it's okay.
Well, let's discuss the difference between the New Jersey tax cap and the investment credits and Metropolitan versus Ward versus this case. In Metropolitan versus Ward, the state wanted to promote the purpose of helping its domestic insurance companies in that state. And the Supreme Court said that may or may not be a legitimate purpose, but you can't do that by imposing three times the premium tax on out-of-state insurers. Here in Texas, the premium tax is 1.35% on 15% of gross premium on the insurer and 1.35% on 85% of gross premium from the agent. There's no differential in tax rate. The only difference is that tax is collected in this way in Texas for efficiency purposes. In the New Jersey case, the court construed two statutes that appeared to have differing objectives. In one statute, the retaliatory statute, of course, was designed to encourage domestics interstate business. The other the purpose of the premium tax cap was to encourage investment in the state. And in that case, the court harmonized the statutes by saying, basically, the legislature could not have intended to give with one hand and take away with the other, to give the insurance companies credit for investing in New Jersey and then take it away through retaliatory tax. So when you compare for purposes of retaliatory tax the home state and New Jersey state, you have to use the actual statutory tax rate. You can't use an effective tax rate.
Is it true, as the petitioner states in their motion for rehearing, that every other state deems the tax paid by the insurer regardless of how it's collected?
No, that's absolutely not true. California, for example, going back to California, the insurance company is subject to net income tax on only its share of the premium. In Washington, the insurance company is subject to tax on its share of premium. In other states do vary. Minnesota.
Well, let me make sure that we're talking about apples and apples here. I understand that it makes them each responsible for that portion, but for purposes of calculating the retaliatory tax, is there a deeming that goes on that deems it all paid by the insurer?
No, there is not. There is not. In the record on page 758, there is a form that First American uses to calculate its Texas tax, and that clearly shows that gross premium is the starting point. Then there is a deduction for premiums retained by the underwritten title companies, which is the agents, and that the total premiums received subject to tax is the net amount of that. So for purposes of calculating its Texas retaliatory tax, First American need only use and must use its 10% contractual share of premium.
I thought the question was, does any other state do that?
Does any other state have the collection mechanism that Texas has?
Does any other state, in calculating the retaliatory tax, divide it between the insurer and the agent?
Yes, they just have different methods of doing it. For example, in Minnesota, well, Minnesota is a little unusual in that it taxes premium twice. It taxes at 100% against the insurance company and exempts the insurance company from income tax. And it taxes the agent at a 9.8% income tax rate but exempts them from premium tax. So, in effect, the premium is taxed twice. But in Texas, the premium is taxed once. And as a result, the legislature gives the exemption from other taxes.
So one other state does that?
California?
Two? The question was how many others, and you answered different times with California, Minnesota. Are there others?
There are only two other states that have statutory division of premium, and they do not have the collection mechanism that Texas uses.
Well, again, I want to make sure. I'm not talking about just division of the premium. I'm talking about in terms of calculating the retaliatory tax, deeming that the insurer collects it all as opposed to how it's actually collected. And you're saying that other states do deem that regardless. I mean, Texas isn't the only one that operates this way in terms of every other state deems it being the insurer who pays. Because I think I keep hearing your answer being how they collect it as opposed to whether it's deemed collected by the insurer.
Okay. Well, the key point about the Texas premium tax statute is that it simply sets up a collection mechanism. Tax is directly imposed on both parties, but the insurer collects it and pays it over. In other states, the collection mechanism is different, but it's just a collection mechanism. It doesn't have any constitutional significance. And, of course,
whatever you call it, collection mechanism or whatever, we're just trying to get to whether Texas is unique. That was the statement by the petitioner.
Texas is unique in its collection.
Okay.
It is not unique in that the insurance company is subject to tax only on its division of premium.
Are there any examples in the record in which an agent has defaulted on its payment to the insurer so that the insurer doesn't have to pay the entire?
Yes. First American proved in this lawsuit that approximately $4,000 in premium tax, that the premium related to that was not collected by it, and the comptroller has agreed on the record that if First Texas timely files a refund claim, that it is entitled to receive that back. I'd also like to note that the statute is not the statute that is in issue. This statute over here went into effect in 2005. It was a codification of the statute. It was not meant to be a modification of the statute, and therefore the comptroller's interpretation at the time the statute was enacted was presumably accepted by the legislature. The statute that's in issue is...
That the result in this case would be different under this statute?
No, it would not be different, but I just wanted to point out that that is not the statute that is in issue in this case.
Well, but does it matter, I guess?
That statute doesn't matter.
No, I mean, does it matter that it's not?
No.
I mean, has the legislature changed anything?
Supposedly, the legislature has not changed the substance. They said they were making a non-substantive codification. And in the legislative bill analysis, the legislature noted that because title insurance agents and insurance companies are subject to premium tax, they are exempt from franchise tax. It reiterated the causal relationship between the exemption and the subject to tax.
Well, but the language, an annual tax is imposed on each title insurance company. You don't claim that because that's now the language, it's something different from the prior statute.
That language is different, Your Honor. There's no question. But that
doesn't matter is what I'm trying to get at.
It does not matter because the legislature included in the codification the provisions about the agent remitting the tax to the insurer in the division of premium, and that the insurer is to collect the tax and remit it to the comptroller. So the same collection mechanism is set up there.
Do you disagree with the Texas-Minnesota example in the petitioner's brief on the merits?
Yes, because it assumes erroneously that retaliatory tax should be added to the premium tax to calculate the out-of-state company's retaliatory tax. No other state does that. And
so it wouldn't, I mean, the example wouldn't come out the way it's set out.
Are you talking about just the example of how it was before and after the Texas? Okay. No, we don't disagree with that. The fact is that Minnesota taxes at a higher rate, and so Texas will be imposing retaliatory tax based on the differential of the rate and the tax base.
Texas was unique among the 50 states in our collection mechanism.
Yes.
But not in terms of imposing the tax on net proceeds.
Right. Well, the tax, of course, the entire tax is imposed on 100% of gross premium. Yes. but it's the collection that's different. Also, it's important to note that the Texas retaliatory statute is not substantially different from the statute that was upheld in the Western and Southern Life case. All the statutes have essentially the same language. Now, Texas does not have in its statute that the insurers and their agents' income, et cetera, but effectively Texas does the same thing, because if the agent is a division or employee of the insurance company, then Texas, of course, because it's one entity, allows the retaliatory tax calculation to include 100% of the gross premium. The situation here is that the agents are separate businesses. And as the Washington Supreme Court said in the business and occupation tax case, the nature of the title insurance industry is such that they are separate business entities, taxes imposed on them separately.
You said there's a National Association of Insurance Commissioners?
Yes.
And it has reviewed this Texas's statute?
It does not review the statutes per se. It publishes the state's interpretation of the statute so that other so that out-of-state companies can calculate their retaliatory tax. It also does the same for premium taxes so that they can calculate the premium tax.
Petitioner was asked about Amicus Stewart Title's statement. What's your reaction to that, to the statement that they made?
Yes. Amicus. If other states, as Minnesota has, adopts petitioner's reading of the statute, then Stewart Title would owe more tax because it would be the retaliatory tax would be added to the premium tax in Minnesota to calculate the retaliatory tax. In other words, everything would be added together instead of separately considered.
But the statement in the brief was, if the court invalidates the comptroller's current interpretation, Stewart will owe more.
Yes, and meaning if the court accepts the petitioner's interpretation of the statute and other states do what Minnesota has done, then Stewart Title will owe substantially more. Because it makes it seem that the Texas premium tax is higher, that it's $13.50, that the insurer's obligation is $13.50 on a $1,000 premium, as opposed to 0.023 cents on a $1,000 premium. And so the lower the tax the greater the differential between the foreign state and the home state, the more retaliatory tax there is.
Further questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Let's go first to the Section 223.003. This is clearly a non-substantive recodification of Article 9.59, which was in effect at the time the case arose. But I believe that this Court's prior holdings suggest that a non-substantive recodification is deemed to reflect the same intent as the original statute. At best, the comptroller has argued that the original statute was ambiguous. I think the wording of 223.003 makes very unambiguous what the legislature intended, which was that 100% of the tax falls on the insurer and therefore is appropriately included in the insurance retaliatory tax.
Did they perpetuate that ambiguity after knowing the comptroller's interpretation here, when they could have corrected it?
It's not clear at all, Your Honor, that the legislature was focusing on the interpretation that's been offered here. This case was in controversy at the time.
That's never clear under our statutory construction
I'm
rules.
Sure that's right, Your Honor. But I think if the legislature had intended to codify the version that the comptroller offers, which is 85% of the tax falls on the agent, they would hardly have used the language that appears in 223.003A to do that. There was also, and I would point out that in this Court's recent decision in the Lexington Insurance case involving surplus lines, there was a reference to 223.003 as imposing tax on the title insurer. The New Jersey case was discussed in terms of what is the impact here, and I think the important lesson to draw from the New Jersey case, which is an interpretation of Western and Southern, is that there are equal protection limitations on how far a state can go. We do not, to be clear, contest the proposition that retaliatory taxes are generally constitutional. That's what Western and Southern held. But they're constitutional when they're applied in the structure that was upheld in Western and Southern, where you're comparing apples to apples. When you get to a situation where one state has a very unusual twist on how they're applying their or how they're interpreting their premium tax, And in calculating the retaliatory tax, they're applying that twist to essentially disregard the vast bulk of the tax that's imposed on this insurance transaction. You're necessarily upsetting the balance that the court was assuming when they upheld retaliatory taxes. And I think given the ambiguity in the statute, there's clear an easy path here, which is for the court to construe this narrowly, as other states have done historically, and as this state has as this court has indicated in cases involving punitive statutes, so as to avoid the constitutional issue.
Let me ask you, why would the state completely exempt agents from any kind of tax?
Your Honor, I think that's primarily because clearly the legislature viewed the entire premium as being taxed. 100% of this premium is being taxed. We can dispute who's paying the tax, but clearly they knew that 100% of the premium was being taxed and that the agents, absent an express exemption, would be a kind of a sitting duck for this tax because they actually collect the entire premium at the closing. They then turn their share over to the insurer. But if there was no exemption in the statute, there's quite possible that other taxing bodies like municipalities would look to that and say, well, we can tax the agent on that, and the state was effectively saying, don't double tax this. The tax has already been paid by the premium tax.
The way I understand it, the legislature is, well, the statute says that the agents are exempted from franchise and other business taxes, and you're arguing that the insurer takes all of this tax, is responsible for all of that, which means that the agent has no tax liability.
Well, that is certainly within the discretion of the legislature, I think, to determine that because the premium has already been taxed, that there's no reason to tax the agent on the same collection, in effect. Whether or not the agent actually pays any tax, certainly the fact that they're subject to tax simply indicates this is a transaction that can be taxed. And there was some discussion about the Washington Supreme Court case involving First American. There, I think, the situation was very different from what we have because, first of all, it was not a retaliatory tax case. The Washington Supreme Court was not addressing the retaliatory tax consequences of the way the premium tax was paid in Washington. But more importantly, the issue there was whether when the agent already paid a business and occupation tax on its share of the premium, whether the insurance company had to pay a tax on that same premium on top of what the agent had paid. And the Washington Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to let you double tax the same premium when you've already taxed it to the agent. And Washington is somewhat out of step with the other states because I think, as we said in our brief, and I still think is correct, every other state views the premium tax as falling solely on the insurance company. And that's even true in California, which there was some discussion of. To be clear, in California, that the insurer's share of the premium, whether it's 10% or whatever they negotiate with the agent, is subject to a premium tax, which is collected directly from the insurer. The agent, the underwritten title company, collects income from all sorts of sources. It's partly from the premiums, from the title insurance, but other services they perform. That's subject to a net income tax, not a premium tax.
Further questions? Thank you, Counselor. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.